This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt Patrick here. Brett will stop in here a little bit later on with Patrick Cooligan, our usual Tuesday guest. Get the latest from the Minnesota Reformer. Patrick, how are we today?
Good. Good to be back in the studio.
Did you have any problem fighting through the box elder bugs outside?
Oh, there were quite a lot of them.
It's apparently an epidemic here in the cities this year. I didn't realize it was that big of a problem. I know there's Box Elder is a town out in South Dakota before you get to Rapid City. I'm presuming they have a bug problem out there. It's just either that or, you know, false advertisement. But you know, they're harmless. It's just, man, there are a ton of them. It's like you have to go through a fog. Not if I've got some in my hair, what remains of my hair, let me know, okay? I appreciate it considering they're, are they nesting? What are they doing? They're just kind of there. What eats box elder? Do we have to get like huge spiders or anything like that to get in here?
I think I'd rather have the box elder bugs than the huge spiders. Yeah, all right.
I've had a bit of a day myself. I got poked a lot today. Yet right now, once again, for the second time in my life, I'm known as the human pincushion. Now, this time, it's for medical reasons. The first time was because, you know, I needed money. It was college. That's good coin, though, as the human pincushion. Dark days, indeed. Anyway, but, you know, this time around, it's because this year, you've probably heard, I had a medical thing here, and I have had enough needles jammed in me this year. I'm good. I hope I don't need to. But today I had to go in. I got my flu shot. I got a shingles shot too. I got my sister-in-law, when we were down in South Carolina, love her dearly. She was going through shingles. She had a bad problem. She had not gotten her shingles shot, and she was having a horrible time with that while we were down visiting. Just was miserable. And she, you know, and it was, I looked at my mom. Now, I was always under the impression I had been inoculated for chickenpox. My mom was a nurse. And back then, you know, nurses, you know, they knew, get inoculated. They didn't look a gift horse in the mouth. And I thought I was. I wasn't. My mom actually, like, oh, no, you had chickenpox. And if you know about shingles, if you had chickenpox, you can get shingles. So I made it an issue. I was going to go get that today. So I got those two shots. I tried to get my booster shot because now I'm apparently in a class because of a pre-existing condition. Now I basically could get the COVID booster shot. The problem is I'm too early. It has to be 6 months from your second shot. I'm on Pfizer. I'm on the Pfizer plan. 6 months from your second shot, and I am only, I'm about 3 weeks short of that. That's going to be mid-October is when I can get that. I'm not going to be able to get it. I'll have to get my booster shot probably sometime in December because they actually want you to go like 8 months before you get the booster shot. But I'm going to, you think I'm crazy? I'm going to get that booster shot in a heartbeat. So, but I've had enough with needles. And, you know, I'm not saying this because I'm not going to get inoculated, because if you just heard me, I'm going to get that booster shot. I'm going to be there. As many needles as I've had jammed into me, as frustrating as it is, in a heartbeat. You know why? Because medicine is smart. That's the smart people. They're telling me something smart. I'm going to do it. And so I'm going to follow up on it. I guess we'll just kind of carry this over to the coronavirus update. And I want to start off on this today with a story here from Summer Brennan. Now, she's a writer, and she's a fairly good follow on Twitter. If you're not there, it's Summer Brennan at Summer Brennan. And she put out a story today, which I think is this: the people who are anti-vax, that are anti-vaccine, the argument, one of the arguments there, they feel as if we're just trying to intrude in their lives. And they don't seem to understand is their reckless decision jeopardizes us all. Not only are they in danger of becoming a carrier of the Delta variant or any coronavirus for that matter, and spreading it among to loved ones and family members because they, you know, they're not going to wear a mask. And I'll tell you what, I got to go get my blizzard, you know, that sort of thing. So not only do they not seem to understand is, you know, if you choose to live or die, if that was the end of it, I can't help you. I hope you would choose life. But if you want to choose to die slowly, painfully in an ICU as you bankrupt your family, wow, bon appetit. But the reality is that you don't realize how deadly you are to everyone else around you. Because you're only focused on your own self-pleasure, you're a selfish, greedy person, and you're only concerned about yourself. You don't concern yourself with the fact that I might want you vaccinated just because I don't want you being a stupid idiot and giving my family COVID. And I think we've learned that if we go with what the idiots are saying, it doesn't go so well. We're in a little bit of a resurgence here, to say the least. If you didn't hear yesterday's interview we did with Kristen Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health, we're 3 to 4 times more cases right now than we were the same time last year. How do you think that's going to end up this fall? God, and this surge is caused by intentional, belligerent stupidity. That's all it is. Selfishness. You selfish jerks that just sit there and say, I don't want to get it because that makes me own the libs and I'm not going to take any precautions to keep everyone safe. Ha! In your face, libs. Oh, what do you mean I'm coughing? Yeah. But there is another side of this. It's not just the fact that there's the potential for these idiots to become super spreader events in their own realm. Right, Paul Gazelka? Yikes. But at the same time, there is the crippling effect this is having on our already fractured healthcare system. I was reading a story the other day. They came in, was it Idaho? They came in with an individual who was in a vehicle accident on the highway. He died in the emergency room because they couldn't get him into an ICU. Because the hospital they took him to was already full of belligerent, selfish idiots who knew better. I'm just going to take the horse dewormer and jam it up my caboose. And all of a sudden, they're paying it for it, and now everyone else is paying for it, including the needy, the medically sensitive. And that's where I get back to Summer Brennan. And this is her story that she shared today, and it is a very sombering one. This is reading from Summer Brennan's Twitter thread. When I got COVID in 2020, I spent weeks in the hospital. It was harrowing. But it was nothing compared to what my family is dealing with now, also as a result of COVID. But this COVID horror story in which no one actually gets COVID, and it still could happen to anyone. In August, my dad was living independently in rural New Mexico. He has, for years, in a beautiful place with a view of the mountains. He got vaxxed against COVID as soon as it was available, wore masks, and was waiting out the pandemic like the rest of us. Then he had a fall. When I called and he admitted that he was in the hospital, he was more annoyed than anything else. He tripped. He had hurt his leg. Couldn't go home for a week or so. How irritating. How dumb. He blamed himself. He loved me. Hoped I was well and I was fine. And that was the last call. What happened was that while in the hospital, my dad caught a viral pneumonia that went unnoticed. The whole state is in lockdown and every hospital ICU is filling up with unvaccinated COVID patients. There weren't enough resources. The governor begged people to get vaxxed. My dad was not in the ICU, but in a physical rehab unit in the hospital to help him with his leg. They now say they did not know he had pneumonia at that point. He collapsed on the floor of his room and was there unnoticed for 6 hours. Because once again, this was not a hospital bed. This was just in a rehabilitation unit. When they found him, he was blue, had an oxygen level of 50. That's not good. He did not have COVID. He was taken to the ER and put in the ventilator, but they had to put him in a storage room because there were physically not enough space due to all the unvaccinated COVID cases, aka idiots. 24 hours later, he was off the vent and his oxygen levels were restored. My siblings, who live closer, flew in. I spoke to him and he was out of it, but okay. Surely he would get treatment now. We thought that was the worst of it. It was not. It was later explained to me that this hospital decided to reintubate my father due to a lack of hospital resources. They couldn't manage. He could not see a cardiologist or a pulmonologist. They were all busy. They could not run the needed tests, so they kept him on the ventilator. In normal circumstances, they simply would have transferred my dad to a larger hospital where there were several close by, but it would have been routine. But due to COVID, it wasn't possible, so impossible, they thought that they didn't even tell me that he needed to be transferred. A few days later, while I had thought my dad was improving, I kept being reassured by the nurses when I called. I finally called and got an exhausted, angry nurse who said bluntly, "We are tapped out because of your father. Of that, your father is going to die. Maybe today. I'm sorry." I demanded to speak to the doctor, and he said more or less the same thing. The state was maxed out. My dad needed a cardiac ICU bed or at least a cardiologist, and there was nothing for him. There was no hope and no point even trying. Everywhere was full of the unvaccinated. Now, there have been other stories like ours in the news over the past month or so. There was the father who was turned away from 43 ICU beds and sadly passed away. People were being flown across state lines to try to save them, their families in terror, the healthcare system in chaos. My dad's doctor said that the New Mexico ICU bed planning was centralized, so there was no point calling New Mexico hospitals, but I could try ICUs in Colorado, Arizona, Texas, Utah, California, even though he said they had already tried all those. He could try again. I could call. I think he was humoring me. The doctor said to send him any leads, so when he called, I called the hospitals. I said I was calling on his behalf. I never said I was his assistant or medical staff, but they talked to me. They were all maxed out, nothing they could do. After about 5 panicked hours of contacting every hospital, I want to make sure I understand something about Summer here. She has been told, basically, and as someone might want to sit there and say, well, the hospitals aren't taking care of them. Hospitals are maxed out. Don't you dare, you unvaccinated fools, don't you dare go after the doctors and the nurses. They have been overwhelmed by your stupidity and false bravado. Here she is, been told her dad is going to die unless she gets an ICU, and here she is frantically calling anyone to try to get her in, and she is, for 5 hours, they could not, yeah, they could do. After about 5 panicked hours of contacting every hospital, every person I could think of, and screaming my helplessness into a maw of the internet to see anyone that could help us, we finally reached a doctor in an Albuquerque hospital ICU who agreed to admit my dad. So that was 2 weeks ago. If he'd gotten into that ICU hours later, we would have lost him. They had to perform heroic acts to stabilize him. In a week, his pneumonia had been brought under control, and he was starting to heal. They talked about a full recovery. However, by that point, my dad had been on the vent for more than 10 days. Once again, he was on the vent because they could not get him into an ICU bed because of the selfish, greedy, unvaccinated who basically, you know, want the oyster opened when they're ready for it. And so they basically overwhelmed the hospital system and they couldn't get him in there. The reason why this guy was on a vent for this long was because of selfish, unvaccinated people. Period. At that point, he'd been on a vent for more than 10 days simply because of lack of access to care. If you're a medical professional, know why this matters. All signs look good. And so they decided to extubate him. At first, he tolerated it. Then he didn't. 3 days later, they had to intubate my dad for the third time. They said that doing this could result in permanent disability. He could fully recover, but he also might not ever be independent again. They gave me the option of making him comfortable instead, and you know what that means. But in my dad's case, he'd been clear that he wanted people to fight for him in a circumstance like this. So I said no. I told them to fight and do whatever they could to save him. To save my dad, they had performed a tracheotomy for a long-term weaning from the ventilator. That means a loop, a hole in his windpipe, like Stephen Hawking. Someone said it might be temporary, it might not. They don't know. It might have saved him, but so far at least it has. I think of my dad before this happened, still working, living on his own, rented home, looking out for The mountains, looking, calling his children, California and France. The doctors and nurses say that a full recovery and getting off the trach is possible, but it will be hard. They also say that none of this would have happened if it were not for the fact that so many people remain unvaccinated against COVID. Even in New Mexico, with a decent vaccination rate, the system is overrun. Please get vaccinated. Wear a mask. You never know how it will affect you. There's a GoFundMe page that she has set up. I will actually put that out there. How does that? Because that story is playing out across the country right now, where people who have done the right thing, who have gotten vaccinated, are trying to get into an emergency room situation or into an ICU for an non-COVID related health problem, but because of a bunch of stupid morons that keep thinking that the Google search I did makes me smarter than those doctors and scientists, are overwhelming our medical system at a rate which is killing people. Listen, you clown cars. Listen, you fools. You're killing people. Your stupidity is killing people. Not only in the fact that you morons walk around with COVID, without a mask, giving it to a lot of people and sickening a lot of people who die, but by the fact that your selfishness is breaking our medical system and causing people who need routine medical care to not be able to get it because you and a bunch of your buddies all of a sudden want the world to freaking stop when you get COVID. Hey, if you don't trust the hospitals, if you don't trust the doctors to get vaccinated, well, what the hell are you doing going to them when you get sick? Stay at home and die there. Stay by your principles, your standards. You think this is a false thing? You think this isn't real? Then just stay home and die there. Instead, you all of a sudden are born-again scientists. And the scientists and the doctors know what they're doing, and you scramble on in there and take up every resource these hospitals have. As you insist, I was still doing my research. Bull crap. You're still trying to own the libs and killing other human beings while you do it. The reason why you guys are so stubborn is because if you actually stop and look at your freaking behavior, you'd be ashamed of yourselves. I sit here day after freaking day saying, I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. And you just don't want to listen to that. It's just that liberal Matt McNeil out on his liberal causes. I can't help you if you're that stupid. I can't. And like I said, if this was a case where you just decided to stay at home and you weren't killing other people, I would still hope you would choose life. But I can't stop you from being stupid. Stay at home and kill yourself if that's what you want. But the problem is you don't understand because you did a Google search and you're to the point where saying, COVID isn't real. It's all crisis actors. There isn't a hospital having a problem. It's all a myth. I'm going to get my horse dewormer. Ugh. You're at the point where you're just too stupid for your own good. But then all of a sudden you get sick and the world's got to stop. The world's got to take care of you because I need help. Well, you didn't do your part for humanity when it came time to get a vaccination, did you? Nope, you just sat there and were selfish, greedy, saying, I'm going to go get my Big Mac and I don't care. Tired of you clowns. You're killing other human beings with your ignorance. That is not debatable. You want to get sick? Fine. Stay at home. When you do get sick, just stay there. Don't go to the hospital. Don't demand doctors that you've been vilifying and hating on and nurses that you've been vilifying and hating on and a system that you've been vilifying and hating on. Don't demand they stop and help you when you get sick. Hold to your standards. Hold to your principles. And at least, at the very least, people like Summer Brennan's father might not have to go through the nightmare scenario they are to get basic care in this country. But Stop with this idea that you somehow are morally superior by not getting a vaccine. You're just a bunch of idiots, and you're killing human beings. God have mercy on your souls. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A lot more on the Minnesota coronavirus update when I do come back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Imagine if it was World War II and we had the rationing that was going on as we were facing off against the Axis powers. Can you imagine what these same people would be like back then? How, you know, you want me to forego having a steak? I don't care about the troops. I want my steak. It's not going to be eaten by the troops. It's going to be eaten by liberals, and liberals don't deserve steak. So I'm not going to give it up. Can you imagine those guys? I mean, back then, if you ever had the mentality of this, you were shunned. Today, it's one of those things, especially the media guys, like, well, it's just a differing opinion. Yeah, they're killing people. They are killing other human beings. A basic sacrifice, a minor needle prick with a COVID vaccine. And you guys act like it's the greatest sacrifice. I'm not gonna wear a diaper on my face, dude. Don't, if you want. I mean, the fact you guys keep referring to them to diapers on your face leads me to believe you guys got some weird, serious, kinky stuff going on in your sex mind. That being said, it's a freaking mask, you idiot. Are you gonna hold to that standard? Are you gonna hold to that standard when you get sick and you have to go to the hospital? Are you going to demand that not one doctor or nurse wears a mask around you? If you have to go into surgery, are you going to, hey, none of you guys wear masks? None of that diaper on your face stuff. No. This is all political theater. That's all this is. Your ignorance is just political theater. You think that you're winning by owning the libs. That's all it is. Because you surely got vaccinated for other things like flu shots and other things. I mean, there's a few religions, and I'm talking some fringe freaking religions, not evangelicals, not Baptists. I'm talking like the Amish that have shunned and stayed away from vaccines. But if you get vaccines, if you've gotten a flu shot and all of a sudden you're saying, my religion says I'm not getting this one. That's just you making, you're using your religion as a fake cover for your political point of view. Get vaccinated. Just, you're killing other human beings. Why does it mean it doesn't matter if your family dies? I mean, God, I mean, now we're starting to get these people's like, yeah, my kids died, but God, I'm glad I'm still not vaccinated. Really? Really? I it's a level of stupidity and ignorance that we have yet to see. And will the freaking media stop acting like it's a goddamn virtue? Will you stop it? It's not. It is harming all of us. It is turned this, what was all, we were on the fringe of getting past this, but because you gotta own the limbs, now we're back in it again. And the reality is the most of the people who are gonna get real sick and die are the unvaccinated. And I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. But if you're determined to do that, well, then fine. Just do it on your own. Don't go to the hospital. You get sick. Don't go to the hospital. Don't demand an ICU bed. Don't demand doctors give you your horse dewormer. Don't. Just deal with your decisions in life. And stop acting like you're always the victim. It's pathetic. The real victims are the people who are having to suffer from your unintelligent, moronic, stupid choices that are fueled only by your political hate, not by anything else. And you're so determined to prove that you're right, you don't realize what you're actually doing, that you're actually killing other human beings. It's just, ugh. You know, you read that thread from Summer Brennan. You just read it and you just realize how many times has that story ended up with a dead parent? How many times, I mean, let's face it, the nurses and doctors are like, you know, he's going to die. That's it. It just, it's, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. And yet it's, if I come out there and I say, wow, you're a bunch of stupid idiots, you're stupid morons. People are like, Matt, your tone is really offline. Is it? I'm trying to save other human beings' lives. I said this to Jeff Stein a few weeks back, where I just said to him, it's like, I think it's my job to basically try to save, if I know people are going to die because of the actions of some, and I can sit here and use this station as a pulpit and say, for goodness sakes, stop. I'm going to do it. The problem is that there are just too many fools out there that when I say, I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt, they hear liberal, liberal, liberal control. And I can't help you. I can't help. If you're that stupid, if you're that dumb, if you're that so blinded by your political hate, well then, fine. Make your choices, but then don't allow your stupidity to impact others. Just stay at home and deal with the consequences. Oh, you're not going to do that? Oh, so you're just a hack. I see.
Don't keep pointing out the fact that we insisted the vaccine is not necessary and then we got sick really bad. Don't keep doing, you make us feelings for hurt.
No, you know what? You know what you do? You're killing human beings. So I don't give a rat's caboose about your damn feelings. I don't care that you got your boo-boo feelings hurt there, boo-boo kitty. I do not care. Not anymore. I don't care about your feelings. I care about the other human beings you are killing with your stupidity. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Mike, I'll get your call after the break. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Just making me angrier and angrier. I mean, and I got some numbers here coming up here that are just going to, you know, you just... This is getting worse and worse, and it's getting worse because of intentional ignorance and the smugness of these people as they kill other human beings. The look at me doing something good as you kill other human beings by either giving them coronavirus and COVID yourself or by taking up the needed medical space we need for other human beings with non-COVID problems because you basically all of a sudden are born-again scientists. After you discover you've got COVID and all of a sudden that hospital and those nurses and those doctors, oh, they were absolutely right all along. I need to get back into the hospital. Yeah. Tired of your ignorance. Mike is in Columbia Heights. Mike, welcome on in.
Thanks, Matt. I think that they should post the bills of the people who passed away from coronavirus and were in the ICUs and post those bills in the newspaper. And then set a date, perhaps a month and a half, and say from that point on, if you haven't been vaccinated and you wind up in the hospital, you're on your own. The insurance doesn't have to pay for it. The government's not going to pay for it. You're on your own.
Well, and Mike, I will say this. One of the things that's interesting about what you just sort of said is that actually is a discussion that's starting to go on here is how long do you offer free vaccinations? You know, how long before you know, if you've got two patients that come in and one person is vaccinated and one person is unvaccinated, do you charge them the same amount for the same services? One person was trying to be preemptive and trying to be safe. The other person wasn't. And those discussions are starting to go on. Trust me when I say there is going to come a time when you look at the cost of things. And thanks, Mike. I appreciate the phone call. When you look at the cost of things and you look at the way that this is done, they are going to look at these people and say it's going to cost you an insane amount of money because this is a preventable illness and you have chosen not to do it. And trust me when I say health insurance companies will always try to find the angle they can make the money. Always. Always. 952-946-6205. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 6,203 new cases. Now, this is a reminder. These are the 3 days, the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday numbers. 6,203 new cases, 11 newly reported dead. The state's death total now is 8,109 since the beginning of the pandemic. More than 700,000 Minnesotans have tested positive for coronavirus infections over a COVID-19 pandemic that has stretched for more than 19 months, the Minnesota Department of Health reported on Tuesday. Minnesota's updated total of 706,158 infections means more than 12% of the state's population of 5.6 million people has tested positive.
It's no more dangerous than the flu, the seasonal flu.
12%. I mean, and at this point, the overwhelming amount of people who are getting sick are unvaccinated. I don't know what the hell's wrong with you people. What in the hell is wrong with you people? You know, and yeah, I just don't. I mean, it just, like I said, in the reality is that, and if I can say something on the political level, for the Republicans that have kind of encouraged this, the Republicans that have gone out there and said, you know, you don't need masks, you don't need vaccines, and there's a lot of Republicans that have said that, that they're going to try to revise, saying, well, I was always saying the vaccines were a good thing. I just think people should have had a choice. I was always a big advocate. They're going to try to revisit their comments, but they're all pretty much anti-vax and anti-mask. A lot of them are. I shouldn't say all of them. There are some Republicans who are pretty smart about this stuff, but there's a lot of Republicans who have pushed the fake narratives that you don't need a mask and you don't need a vaccine. Let me make sure you understand something. The more cases like Summer Brennan that come up, the more people that actually are poisoned. And like I said, how many people within that family circle right now have zero tolerance for this Republican right wing own the libs by not getting vaccinated and not wearing a mask mentality? Yeah, you're wondering what's going to happen to you in 2022. Trust me, you can come out and say, I'll give you a tax break. Why don't you give back my grandmother or my mom or my son? Why don't you give me back my spouse who died? Why don't you give me that back, huh? Can't do that? Well, then I'm done with you. 12% of the state's population. Wow. As of September 23rd, the state reported that 3,396,209 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,225,345 people have completed the vaccine series. Through September 27th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 767. That's up from 755 on Monday. Of those hospitalized, 196 people are in intensive care and 571 are in general hospital care. Also, the 6,203 positive results on Tuesday update were from 100,025 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 6.20%. The positivity rate over the past 7 days has been 7.27. A reminder, 5% is where the break-even point is, that you're basically under that, you're controlling your outbreaks. Above it, you're not. And we were down to 1% before the stupid people got in there. From Axios Twin Cities, if you're feeling sick or worried about COVID-19 exposure and looking for a quick answer, you might be out of luck. Renewed demand for COVID-19 testing is making it tougher and slower to get results than some popular types of tests. Many local pharmacies are booked several days out for rapid tests, and at-home ones can be hard to find. We tried a half dozen pharmacies around the metro, including the suburban Walmart last week with no avail. One worker told Axios all the Walgreens in the metro area are sold out at the at-home tests. While more than 95% of the results of the rapid saliva tests offered via the state's testing program with Vault Health are still available within 24 hours, per a company spokesperson, the median turnaround time is up. It was 5 hours from when the sample lands in the lab this summer. The latest available data shows it's clocking in at 9 hours an hour. It doesn't include the time it takes for the sample to get from the test site to the lab, which can vary based on location and time and day. Minnesota's health officials said they have heard anecdotally that tests from pharmacies and other doctors' offices take 24 to 72 hours for results, but it is possible that a turnaround times are longer now than they were previously. Testing is key to curbing COVID-19 spread and allowing for us to responsibly go about our lives as a Delta variant circulates. Many parents want rapid test results so they can get their kids back to school or more activities per classroom exposure. While the more accurate no-swab chain reaction tests remain available, at-home tests that deliver results in minutes versus days can be especially helpful. At-home tests remain a very short supply. Nationwide, State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm told reporters on Friday, but there's still plenty of capacity for lab-based tests. Malcolm didn't have an estimate of when a supply would be up, but she noted that the Biden administration says expanding access to home kits is a priority. Statewide testing levels are close to double what they were this last time last year. Per the Minnesota Department of Health, Vault had processed 86,000 tests as of September 20th, up from 34,000 in July, but far below the peak of 372 logged November of 2020. The spreading of Delta and testing requirements in workplaces, constant travel has caused more demand to surge nationwide. In Minnesota, school-related cases, and we talked yesterday about that, and therefore exposures are also up. Families filed and are filled. Many of the testing booths at the site run at MSP on Saturday afternoon. St. Paul mom Kate Madonna Seeger tweeted about her frustration with the total and utter lack of resources for parents who want to do the right thing but are stuck back up testing hell for initially facing a three-day wait for her nine-year-old results. Well, once again, you've got the private market. This is, you know, a smart plan would have the government be in charge of all this and get these testing kits out there. Unfortunately, you're kind of at the mercy of the private sector. And if the private sector is not making the product or is basically getting out demanded for their product, well, you know, guess what that's going to do? It's going to create a lot more problems for you. Gary is in Minneapolis. Wanted to chime in on something. Hey, Gare Bear.
Yeah, Matt, I'm talking about that $3.5 trillion. There's so much good stuff in there, like help cut the cost of dentures and hearing aids, child care for ladies, and all kinds of support for the people on the bottom and the middle. And it's about time. I think we come to the point now where we're headed towards a 1930s style depression if it keeps up. And we need somebody like similar to Roosevelt. I mean, he has some touches like Roosevelt a lot. It's the best thing I've seen in a long time. And I guess that's about it. Obama said today on TV, they're going to get something, but we don't want them to water it down as much as little as possible.
Thanks, Gary. Child care for ladies, you say. All righty. Thank you, Gare. Focusing on the topic of the spending bill. I'll get back to the Minnesota coronavirus update. That's always nice to hear from you, Gare. 952-946-6205. Nearly 200 Minnesota health workers have filed a federal lawsuit over the pending requirement that they need to be vaccinated against COVID-19 or risk losing their job. The lawsuit was filed on Monday at U.S. District Court against federal health officials and about 20 Minnesota healthcare providers that operate hospitals and clinics throughout the state. It contends the lack of alternatives to vaccination infringes on the rights of those employees who range from doctors and nurses to respiratory therapists and technicians. You're talking about people who held the hand of people dying of COVID, said Minneapolis attorney Greg Erickson, who filed the case. These folks risked their lives to help the patients, and now they're being terminated because of their religious beliefs. Okay. Their religious beliefs won't allow them to take the vaccine. It's really sad. Okay, wait a second here. Let me stop right there. So are you saying that they've never gotten vaccinated? Now, I don't know if you've read the Bible. I'm just religious talk here for a quick second. The Gospel of Matthew, you're supposed to take care of the sick, which would mean if you can give someone a vaccine for an illness so they don't get sick from the illness, mission accomplished, right? I don't think Jesus was ever on an aircraft carrier with a banner behind him, but still, you get the point, right? Take care. I mean, if I'm presuming you're talking about Christian faith. The Christian faith is pretty clear. Jesus would be for vaccinations. He would. But if you're one of these people, one of these sects, one of these minor sects, and that's not the evangelicals, and it's not if you've gotten vaccinated for other things, trust me when I say this, the Bible doesn't say, but when that Joe Biden comes up with a vaccine for COVID-19 in 2,000 years, oh, that one is against, that's not what Jesus wants. That's not in the Bible. So if you're saying it's religious reasons, well, then you're telling me that these people have a proven track record that they have never once gotten vaccinated for anything, which, by the way, I find to be a hoot if they're in the healthcare industry. And so I'm going to call you on that one. And I want you to explain to the courts how Jesus was against if people have gotten vaccinated for other things, polio, rubella, you know, pneumonia, flu shots. When I'm thinking about, they used to get it all summer with the mosquitoes. Had scarlet fever, whatever the case may be. Whatever the disease, if you're saying that none of those people have ever gotten any vaccines forever, okay, fine. I mean, at least I'll have an argument to your point. But if you're going to go in front of a judge and say, well, sure, they got all these vaccines, but this one, Jesus said no. I want to hear that argument. Holy God, I want to hear you get away with that, because I'm going to imagine it's not the case. And like I said, then you got the Gospel of Matthew you're going to have to get around, because that's Jesus' actual orders, and that's taking care of the sick. And that means vaccines are good. So, I mean, no, seriously, how are you going to argue this religiously? Well, unless your religion is Trump. Is it the religion of Trump? Because it's not evangelical, it's not Baptist, it's not Christian of any kind. I mean, outside of some fringe ones. But like I said, would you have no vaccinations and still be working as a doctor and a nurse? I doubt it. I would highly doubt it. So don't use your religion as a cover here. You just don't want to do it. Now, could you have a legitimate fear of needles? Okay, fine. But that's is that then, yeah, I would make an argument. If you've got a legitimate fear of needles, why are you in the medical profession anyway? That's got to be a little bit of a hard day. I get the impression what this is more about is my politics. I want to still own the libs, but there's consequences if I do it. And so I don't want there to be consequences for my actions. Oh, I'll use Christianity to defend myself, even though there's nothing in Christianity that actually backs up what I'm saying here. Unless you're one of those sects that's, like I said, that you're one of those fringe Christian groups that basically says no vaccines at all. So, you know, if that's what you're saying, well, then you might have an argument. But I don't think we got too many Amish doctors and nurses in Minneapolis hospitals. I don't think that that's something we got a lot of. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't see too many horse and buggies parked in the parking lot, Ramp. I just don't. I just, you know, it's, don't see too much of that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's horse and buggy parking in other parts of these hospitals I'm just not seeing. 952-946-6205. Yeah, good luck with that one. I want to hear that argument. I can't wait to hear that one. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, going back to the story about the people that are filing the lawsuit in federal court, the defendants are served with court papers on Tuesday. The Minnesota Hospital Association, a trade group that includes many of the defendants, issued a measured statement to the response. While it is not possible for us to speak to litigation on federal action that does not yet exist, Minnesota's hospitals and health systems have been working for many months to encourage Minnesotans to get vaccinated as the best path out of COVID-19 pandemic, the association statement says. We have been working on all fronts to ensure people understand the vaccines are safe and effective in preventing serious illness, hospitalizations, and death from COVID-19, and we've been strongly encouraging all staff members to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. I find it hilarious that the same people that when like the Alibi Bar or that place down in Albert Lea, or they don't want to go with COVID restrictions, and the same people who scream, it's a private business, they can do what they want, all of a sudden when it's someone who wants to put in a vaccine standards, it's like, how dare a private business do what they want? Yes. Finally, in this hour, Eastern Carver County Schools' decision to require masks for all students, regardless of vaccination status, for the next few weeks has led to a heated board meeting on Monday, including a physical scuffle between two attendees. The district, which includes the communities of Chaska, Chanhassen, Victoria, and Carver, announced the update on the safe learning plan on Monday due to rising COVID-19 cases over the past several weeks. The new masking policy requires those in pre-K through 6th grade to wear a mask through at least October 31st, while students in 7th grade through 12th will be required to wear a mask at least through October 15th. Okay. Hours after the masking policy was updated, people packed the school board meeting room with more than 50 people signing up to speak during the 45-minute reform. The majority spoke against the mask. The majority of the howler monkey spoke against the mask, which led some to heated moments that included some pushing and shoving that began after an unmasked man rolled his chair over to a masked man who just spoken in support of the district's decision. The unmasked man can be heard accusing the man of lying to the board. Shut up, you moron. Dear Lord. The unmasked man, that's the moron I'm talking about. It prompted school board chair Dr. Jeffrey Ross to remind people to be respectful. The same two men who were later seated behind the podium in the camera got into a more heated scuffle moments after the open forum ended. Was the guy just sitting there to harass people who were speaking on that behalf of masks? The issue was apparently over a picture the masked man allegedly took of the unmasked man. Well, I get, if you're upset about pictures, dude, you're sitting right on camera, you idiot. A few other men stepped in to help defuse the situation while Ross called for the police officers and later stressed civility as community members to not resort to violence. A few people who could be seen on the meeting video were wearing masks in the back room, all but one of the school board members. Fred Berg was masked in there. The district updated the mask policy because Carver County's 14-day case per 10,000 rate was 50.38, which is above the district's threshold to increase masking requirements for all students. That's pretty dang high, actually. And I know the decision will be difficult for some of our community. The heck with them! Just do the right thing. As much as each one of us wishes to or so, the pandemic is not over. Until that time, we must do everything we can to keep each other safe and healthy, keep our students learning in person, said the superintendent. As of September 23rd, a total of 89 COVID-19 cases among students and staff have been reported, while 363 students and 15 staff are in active quarantine. That's the district's dashboard there that's reporting that. So, yeah, they got a problem down there, but hey, Screamer Guy is here. Thank God we've got Counterpoint. Just get vaccinated and wear a damn mask. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson is kind enough to join us on his usual Tuesday sojourn into the studio. Hi, Brett.
Hello, hello. We were just talking. You were on fire at the top of that first hour, and I don't blame you at all. That was good.
Well, I'm tired of it.
Oh, I am too, yeah.
Like I said, I mean, I want you to be alive, but if you are saying, no, I don't want to, then fine. Just stay at home. Stay by your guns. If the doctors, the nurses, the scientists are all wrong so that you can't get a vaccine, when you get sick, well, then have the consistency then to say, well, they're still wrong. I'm going to stay home, and I'll hopefully get through this with my horse dewormer.
That's going to happen more and more. Not the horse dewormer, but people going to the hospital, maybe in a car accident, and not being able to get taken care of.
Can I just put this out? I do not need anyone else sending me the video of Dr. Scott Jensen, the witch doctor. Which doctor is going to be? An actual doctor or the weird doctor? The witch doctor, Scott Jensen, if his comments about scotch tape on his nether regions to justify, you know, taking horse dewormer. Oh, God. I've seen it. It's like I said, to a point, I don't want to bring this up. Because I want that guy to be the GOP nominee for governor. Can you? I would if that was your final debate. You just catch what I'm saying here. Governor Walz and Scott Jensen. Governor Walz, I go to a question. It's like, hey, can Dr. Jensen just go over the duct tape on his caboose once again? The whole thing. I want to hear that story again. I think everyone wants to hear that story. I just let it go. And we'll call that race pretty quick on that, like, in 2022. Will it beat the 56 seconds out that Klobuchar beat Neuberger? We don't know. It could, though. If it's Jensen. I mean, he's not going to do well in
the general election. My God. I mean, he's trying to become Dr. Nick, it sounds like, with all this advice.
Oh, hey, everybody. Yes. So two stories for you before we get into Patrick Cooligan, our usual Tuesday guest here. The Chaska Papa Murphy's location will be closed. I don't know why this was in the Bring Me the News, but apparently it's affecting, I'm guessing, the writer of the story directly. Damn it! Chaska Papa Murphy's location will be closed.
I was going to go there tonight.
What, really?
No.
Okay. The fort closed for the foreseeable future. You're going to Arby's? What? Future, due to the lack of workers and job applicants, apparently, what are you talking about? The Chaska Papa Murphy's is not the most hopping place to work in Chaska? Carrie Paulson, manager of the location, made the announcement Monday on Chaska Minnesota Bulletin Board Facebook group. As of 8 p.m. that night, she wrote the Chaska location would be closed. Paulson confirmed this plan to bring me the news over the phone. She said she could not provide any additional details. Well, I mean, I don't think we're really missing the story here. You can't get workers. Now, and this, by the way, this is where I think you're going to have the hardest time, is that in these tertiary suburbs, where you're out of the metro area, so, and you're not really on the bus lines, you're not on the transit lines, and you need people that are willing to go work for that, you know, low-wage job, well, then your mainly your base is going to be the high school kids in the area. And if they're either not wanting to work or if they're getting a job offer someplace else, we talked about nursing homes. I've actually become more convinced that the nursing homes and the senior centers, the getting the kids to go work in their kitchens has really decimated the hiring pool on a lot of these places. And that's where they're at. And so it doesn't surprise me.
That's an interesting point you bring up with the high school kids. That probably is their workforce. And if they're getting better jobs, that's the market going to work. And then you got to raise your wages.
And you can't, I mean, I feel sorry for you. You're out in Chaska. You know, you're not going to easily get a lot of people, I mean, in, you know, to get a bus to get out there.
Well, and if you're only going to pay them $9 an hour, too, yeah.
Well, and when's the bus? Okay, when did they close? Probably like 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night? Is there even a bus that runs to Chaska from, say, you know, say, not even into the city, but say like Bloomington or you know, Richfield or something like that? Is there, you know, Eden Prairie even?
Prairie's a stretch to get a bus out there like at 10, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I guess.
Let alone Chaska Chanassen, yeah.
They hope to reopen by October 12th. The closure is due to lack of employees and applicants across the company. So it's not just them. The staff there will work at the Chanhassen or Shakopee Papa Murphy's location. Good news there. Apparently, and once again, a lot of places, and once again, Wisconsin Pizza Joint, two Rochester restaurants, they were Panera in Rochester, Osseo Bar, changing hours. I mean, a lot of places have done it, but I also want to make sure we point out something. A lot of people have argued do not pay these people more money because these jobs are stepping stone jobs. And so the point that I want to make is that when the people don't come back to that job because they either got another job or they just don't want to work for stepping stone wages, then you know, you calling them lazy or saying you can't, this is a problem you created. You are the ones that downplayed the importance of these jobs, said you didn't need to raise the wages, didn't need to give them benefits, didn't need to have safety protocols with COVID in there. You're the ones that said that. So then when all of a sudden people say, well, the heck with that, don't act like all of a sudden you're the one that's been wronged. They just don't want to play your game anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the free market, as they like to say, doing its job. If people are finding a better job, paying more money, as you said, with the nursing homes, that sounds like a good gig if you're getting 15, 16 bucks to do a nice, fun job dealing with old people that probably are fun
I bet it's work, but I mean, as my neighbor, one of my neighbor kids is over there, and she says it's just a delight bringing the food to the rooms. Oh, and the women are, the patients there are just lovely.
It beats retail, at least in my book.
My Big Mac was not Mackey enough. What? Really? Okay. I guess we could try to fix that. Speaking of fixing things, guess what? The question is almost as old as time. New professional sports team owner comes to town, says the first thing they want, a new stadium. Soon-to-be Timberwolves Lynx owners Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez were introduced to fans Monday at a press conference. Lohr said he wants to eventually build a new arena from scratch. There is opportunity to eventually build a new arena and fuse it with the latest technology. Well, first of all, where would you build it? Target Center is an amazing location to have a facility, right on the heart of downtown. What, are you going to put it over by the U.S. Bank Stadium? Way over there, maybe? I don't know. Most of the basketball arenas I know of are relatively in the heart of the city.
And by the way, they also are hockey arenas, too. We're one of the few markets that has both a basketball and a hockey team that play in separate arenas. So if we have to build one of these things, we better build it for both the Wild and the Wolves. That's a waste of money if we have to build two of these things.
Well, the X is a pretty good venue for the hockey squad.
Yeah. Well, give it 10 more years, and they're going to start asking for an arena. That's going to be pushing 30 years.
10, it'll be like five.
Yeah.
They'll be asking, like, we need a completely new one. It just cost 4 years ago that Cruz finished a $140 million renovation to Target Center, which cost taxpayers $74 million. It was meant to extend the life of the arena for another 20 years. It lasted four. And then it was $74 million on that.
How much? Yeah, $174 million for 4 years of up.
They're going to come on out there. They say they have no plans to move the team.
Well, if you can't trust A-Rod, who can you trust?
The soon-to-be San Jose Lobos. Yes, yeah. but I will say, they're going to come on out. You know, it's like, you build a stadium. That's how you get a winning franchise.
And we'll get the old, we're looking over pictures in Las Vegas. That looks like a pretty nice arena.
Kansas City or St. Louis would be the prime one. They'll go out there and they'll start looking around. Yeah, I could see a team here. We'll take it. Just go. Just let's be done with it, all right? We'll move these teams out of here. Trust me, we'll have things to do here. It'll be a lot better. And, and basically, if we do that, can we outlaw any team from any professional sports team from coming back into our town and using Minneapolis-St. Paul as a threat to other communities? No. You want out of here? Fine, you go. But then your league basically can't come back here and threaten the Pelicans, the New Orleans Pelicans, or the Memphis Grizzlies. You can't threaten them with Minneapolis-St. Paul. No, you got to go find another city because we're not going to be your pawns anymore. We'll be done with it.
Who's going to miss the Wolves anyways? I mean.
Oh, yeah, that's a grand product you got over there. How many years? 15 years of just garbage basketball?
One year since 2004 they made the playoffs. They got swept anyways back when they had, what was his face, Jimmy Butler on the team.
Oh, yes. Great. Well, yeah, how many millions you want for that product? And then the Lynx, I should mention, the Lynx got bounced in their one game. And that's one thing I don't like about the WNBA is that, your second round of your playoffs should not be a one and done. You should not have a one and done in your second round of your playoffs.
Now, can we launch a deal with the NBA or Alex Rodriguez and the other guy that owns the team? They can move the Timberwolves. They should leave the Lynx, though. Put the Lynx over at the X or something if we're going to be losing the Wolves. I'm fine for keeping those guys around.
Well, I mean, considering the progressive nature of this city, if you said we need $100 million to build a Lynx stadium, I bet you that would get approved a lot faster than $200 million for a Lynx T-Wolves stadium. I think it would.
I think, yeah, that's a good deal. $100 million, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's a lot of money. But for an arena, that's not very
dedicated
much.
Dedicated to the Lynx alone. Yeah. That's not
From a business perspective, I think they would actually have to spin the Lynx off because the two most rumored destinations for the Wolves would be Vegas and Seattle, both of which already have WNBA franchises.
Okay. Well, and yeah, or they just shut down the Lynx.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a bummer.
Well, are you actually going to go with the integrity of a sports owner or franchise or network or league? No, I don't think that's a good plan. Cooligan, we're running late already. Cooligan, oh, yes. Patrick Cooligan, what do we got?
Yeah, we're talking about Jahlil Stallings and, of course, video surveillance footage that was released. And then we'll also be talking about making sure we're getting our frontline workers pay through the state legislature. They set aside $250 million for our frontline workers, but trying to figure out what's going to happen, where is that money going to go? And, of course, Republicans are using this to threaten removing more commissioners. So,
indeed. Well, obviously more on that with Patrick Cooligan, with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual, we're joined by Patrick Cooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer website, minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. As today, we'll be talking about a number of stories that the Reformer has been working on. So, Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off with the latest in the Jahlil Stallings case, as we do have a video camera footage that was released from Jahlil Stallings, where, for a quick refresher, this was a guy who, in the days after the murder of George Floyd, was outside protecting, I believe, a convenience store, and all of a sudden an unmarked police van showed up unannounced and started firing upon Stallings and his group. Stallings, of course, not knowing that they were police officers, fired back. Once he realized they were cops, he immediately surrendered, laid down, and the police, unfortunately, according to the body camera, the camera footage we've now recently seen, showed up and started beating him, even though Stallings was clearly surrendering at the time. So basically what it seems like, the video footage definitely kind of confirms what we heard about in the trial and also what you guys have been reporting on in the Reformer.
Right. I think it served as confirmation and helps us understand why the jury acquitted him. If you see from the surveillance video taken in the parking lot, I mean, it all happens very fast. But that white unmarked police van rolls up and they're just shooting at people with 40 millimeter. They're rubber bullets, essentially. And Stallings is an Army veteran and is armed. He has a permit to carry his pistol. I was shot in the chest with a rubber bullet, and you can imagine the quick reflex. He fires back, doesn't hit anyone, and then they roll out of this van. He's on the ground. Once he realizes that they're police, he's on the ground. They come over, and they spend 30 seconds or so beating him to the point where he fractured an eye socket, wound up in the hospital, despite claims made by police and prosecutors that no one was hurt. He was sent to the hospital. And despite what's pretty clear on the video, he was still charged with eight separate charges by the Hennepin County attorney, but acquitted in July.
Yeah, and that's the part that gets me after seeing that video footage largely confirming what we had kind of already seen, reported, and heard from the trial. I mean, they offered Stallings, I believe, a plea deal, which still would have required him to serve several years in prison. So certainly there's some questions raised about the Hennepin County Attorney's Office in terms of why they decided to charge Stallings. And I don't know if we've heard anything from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, or have they largely been kind of moot on the issue as to why they still charged him despite this video evidence that we now have?
No, they won't say anything about that. They've not made the county attorney available for an interview. They were fighting the release of the video. And so I think we'll just have to learn more, potentially in a civil case, I imagine. You mentioned the county attorney, and then there's also the police. I mean, I think we'd all like to know what the strategy was there 5 days after the murder of George Floyd, driving around on unmarked vans and just shooting kind of indiscriminately at people just because they're out after curfew with your rubber bullets. And it was just bound to create this kind of situation that somebody was going to not know that they were being shot at with rubber bullets by police and they were going to fire back. I think there's questions, right? And then, of course, there's why you're beating a guy who's on the ground and unarmed to the point where you're putting him in the hospital. And we're told by both the mayor and the police chief that there's some kind of investigation that's ongoing of the officers in question and potential discipline. But in his statement, the chief of police was very, I would say, conciliatory, not toward Mr. Stallings, but toward the officers. And he said it's important to consider the context here and that the city was had been looted and burned and so forth. And so it seemed as if the chief of police was trying to explain the behavior of the officers. And so I'm not super hopeful about any kind of discipline being meted out. They've not disciplined anyone, any officers related to the unrest following the murder of George Floyd at this point. So we're still kind of waiting on any decisions there. We know that they take a long time to make these decisions, to do these investigations and to make these decisions very often because of some previous reporting we had done on all these disciplinary investigations and sanctions over the past several years. It takes them more than 500 days to make a decision. I guess we just wait and see. and or the voters will demand more reform.
I think another part that's kind of missed in this, too, as you talked about with the police, certainly their actions definitely raise some questions. But I kind of want to focus on, well, the police report that was filed by them, because as you guys report, body cam video shows that Stallings repeatedly tried to surrender to the police officer, saying, listen, listen, sir, I'm trying to, as Minneapolis police officer Justin Stenson and Sergeant Andrew Battelle beat him for, as you said, about 30 seconds. But Stenson, in his report, wrote that he struck Stallings to gain control of him, even though he was flat on the ground, and claimed Stallings was not complying. To me, that's a big, big red flag, because clearly, from what we can see in that video camera footage, Stallings was not resisting whatsoever. So I'm sure questions are going to be raised on that aspect, too, with the police report.
Right, and we've seen this before as well, where the reports are flatly contradicted by what we see in video taken by either bystanders or in body camera footage, and certainly that raises a lot of questions about the veracity of the officers, and not just in this case, but all of their investigations.
So kind of dovetailing on what we're talking about, because as you said, there's likely going to be a civil lawsuit involved with this case with Stallings and the Minneapolis Police Department. This is another story you guys are reporting on in the Minnesota Reformer, and this has to do with some budget problems in the city of Minneapolis from a combination of workers' compensation claims from police that are leaving the force and also from police brutality lawsuits because, well, even though you probably hear about that in the news, how, for instance, well, so-and-so family is going to receive several $1 million, or in the case of Justine Rizik-Demann, she's getting $20 million in the wrongful death settlement with the city. This is causing a big budget strain in the city of Minneapolis right now, and I know Dina has been reporting on that. If you can fill us in a little bit more on the details, because if you combine this litigation that the city is now facing with Minneapolis police officers now leaving the force, it's really put the city in quite a hole in terms of the budget.
Right. More good reporting from Dina Winter. She's reporting on the city's self-insurance fund. What that means is that various departments of the city, they pay premiums, and then in the case of these lawsuit settlements and then also workers' comp, the city pays out of that self-insurance fund. So, you know, I think people maybe they have the mistaken impression that if we face one of these, if Minneapolis residents or the city of Minneapolis faces one of these settlements, that or the insurer just pays. Well, that's not really the case. It's the taxpayers, it's the people of Minneapolis who are going to pay. And these settlements, I mean, you named one that was, I think, $20 million, that the Floyd family was $27 million. And they're just, we can expect more of them. And then you have the number of worker Minneapolis police and firefighters primarily who are claiming workers' comp has risen dramatically, and that's also costing a lot of money. And at a certain point, you have to make a choice between either higher taxes or reduced services to pay for these settlements and workers' comp claims that are many of them are post-traumatic stress claims that have come since the unrest following the police murder of George Floyd.
You can read more about that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. I want to talk about one more story, and this is one that you wrote in the Reformer today, and this has to deal with, well, essential worker bonus pay, because earlier this year, the state legislature did approve about $250 million in bonus pay for essential workers, but the problem now is, well, the devil's in the details in terms of who gets that money, and both the DFL and the GOP disagree quite a bit on who this money should be spent on, and it looks like we would need a special session to decide who and, well, where this money is going to go, and lots of disagreements between the Democrats and the Republicans. If you can lay the scene on where each of those sides would like to see that $250 million go for that essential worker bonus pay.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all happy that they do have some agreement that people who were not able to work at home and really put themselves at risk, they deserve some compensation for really keeping government and key businesses going. Republicans had want to kind of narrow the circle. I don't know if that's a proper metaphor, but they want a smaller group of people to receive more money, and their focus is on long-term care workers, healthcare workers, personal care attendants, and prison guards. And the Democrats want there to be a larger circle of people because they say more than just those people that I listed took risks by they were working in congregate settings where the virus was spreading, and they should be compensated as well. And if there's any progress, it's the fact that we kind of have settled on a number. We know how many people were kind of going out there and putting themselves at risk, and it's 667,000. So if you do the math, if they were to keep the $250 million pool, you talk about $375 a person. There's a couple different ways out here. You could have a two-tiered approach. The easiest, it seems to me, is just to increase the total amount of money. But there was also, there's a bunch of kind of smaller debates, certainly to the issue of who's in and who's out. There was a TV report last week that said that meatpacking workers would not be receiving anything, and that really got the DFL animated because there's been a lot of outbreaks in meatpacking facilities, the demographics of meatpacking are we're talking about people of color, majority who work in those plants nationwide, and so it seemed to raise questions about why would we be excluding these workers. Many of whom did actually come down with COVID. So that's certainly been a key part of the debate. And then there's also politics that really have nothing to do with the essential worker bonus pay. And that's the Senate Republicans who are in the majority in the state Senate. They've not confirmed the vast majority of Governor Tim Walz's commissioners, his cabinet, including his health commissioner. The governor and Democrats want some assurance that if they come back into special session, the Senate Republicans are not going to vote to essentially fire the health commissioner while the pandemic is going on. Republicans say, no, we're not going to do that. They're against vaccine mandates, and they're against the kind of muscular response of the Walz administration to the pandemic. And so the politics there, and there's two members of the Senate Republican caucus who are running for governor. So all of that is in the mix, and it's going to make this pretty complicated. I think that they can get to a deal on essential worker bonus pay relatively easily if they're actually committed to it. But then you've got all these other side issues, and I think that's going to complicate matters. So we'll see if they can actually get this done.
And, of course, the Republicans in the Senate now do have a new leader, with Jeremy Miller taking over the post that was formerly held by Paul Gazelka, who is now, of course, running for governor right now. I'm interested what his thoughts are in terms of trying to remove more commissioners, and especially someone like Jan Malcolm, who is the Department of Health commissioner, because I would imagine that would certainly grab a lot of people's attention that she could potentially be removed in the midst of a pandemic. And, of course, it also would be one of the first moves that Miller would make as the Republican Senate Majority Leader. So a lot on his plate. What exactly has he been saying in terms of what could happen with any of these commissioners during a possible special session?
Well, he's in a tough spot. He was a recently elected leader, and we don't know what kind of assurances were given in the caucus room when he was elected. But certainly he needs to put on a public posture of being a tough negotiator. And he's got to keep that caucus happy. On the other hand, as his first move, does he really want to remove the commissioner of health during a pandemic? I think that Governor Walz wants to keep his cabinet in place and keep his health commissioner. But I mean, that would be a political gift to Walz if you were to remove the health commissioner during a pandemic, and it would be driven to a large degree by some anti-vaccine senators. It's kind of a it's not the message that that Jeremy Miller wants to be putting out, that the Senate Republican caucus are anti-vaccine and are so extreme in their views that they're willing to dump the commissioner of health of the state of Minnesota during a pandemic.
Yeah, and especially since that special session would be called about 12 months before the general election in 2020. So some complicating factors for Jeremy Miller as he tries to balance the politics with the base of his caucus, which is very much anti-vaccine and a lot of the measures that Governor Tim Walz took during the COVID-19 pandemic and has still been taking now as well. We've been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you follow along all the great reporting they do over at MinnesotaReformer.com, including just some great work they've been doing on this Jahleel Stallings case in the city of Minneapolis. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today. Thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure, Brett. Thank you.
And let's take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, a lot of chatting going on the live stream today. You can watch the show if you so like. Go to Facebook and watch it on AM 950 Radio, or you can also go to Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show and on Facebook and watch the show there if you so desire. 952-946-6205. So I want to take a moment right now to revisit some things that I have said that are good reminders of where we're at and how we can make things better. And part of what we have to do as Democrats is realize the weakness that we have that kind of is almost to a point inherent in the party because of the lack of commitment the party demands. Now, I think what got me thinking about this today was earlier today, and I posted this story up on social media, was talking about how when the current conservative Supreme Court gets rid of Roe v. Wade, which they probably will, they're next going to go after the gay community and basically say, yep, you can discriminate at will against gay people. That will probably be their next step. And the point I made was that the Democrats are going to probably wait for four or five more massive violations before they finally stand up and do something, whether they probably expand the Supreme Court or something of that nature. Even though and they'll campaign on that. They'll say, oh, we're going to expand the Supreme Court. They'll do this. Then they'll actually win. They'll get there and they'll kind of hem and haw like, well, should we really do that? Then they'll apologize as they do and then basically campaign against themselves saying, we're so sorry, we should have done that. Because that's what Democrats kind of do. I mean, yeah, I brought up the Affordable Care Act. I mean, that should have been a piece of signature legislation. Do you know how many stupid Democrats were sitting there going, when we got to the 2010 election, and sat there and said, we're so sorry, we should never have tried to pass health care. No, you should have been championing that bill. And so when you weren't fighting for Democratic issues, the only people that won were the Republicans. Ta-da! That wasn't because of the Affordable Care Act. That was because the Democrats basically cowered when they should have been proud. I remember in 2012, when we defeated the anti-gay marriage amendment here, and I was doing shows and I was like, okay, guys, now it's time to make gay marriage legal in Minnesota. And the Democrats were like, I don't know about that. Boy, that's a pretty extremist point. What are you talking about? You just had a referendum. People do not want to discriminate against gay couples. Pass the bill. And I remember I had like 3 weeks of shows where I had to literally shame these Democrats into doing the damn thing. I don't think it was necessarily me, but I know a lot of people are like, why are you not doing this? And finally they did. And initially it was like, oh, we're going to get creamed in the election. And, you know, you guys got to stop apologizing for standing up for your principles. That's what you guys got to stop doing. And so I saw that story this morning in regards to the Supreme Court. And I just, clearly we have to, the Democrats still are not fighting at the same level as the Republicans are. And part of it is the fault of the way that the Democrats are made up. I have brought this analogy out before. I will bring it out again. Imagine you have a farm field and the fields are split into two separate fields. On one is the right side. On the other is the left side. And they're both big fields. They're both very big with a fence running down between the two of them. Okay? Just one big green area with a fence in between the two of them. And on one side, you have the Democrats, and they're all there. And you get guys like Manchin and Sinema. They sit there and they say, well, gosh, look how big this field is. I mean, those people way over there, they're supposedly part of our group. But look. Right on the other side of the fence, only 10, 15 feet away from me, are those guys. And they're a lot closer to me than those guys are. I'm going to sell out my entire field to basically side with them. They do that. Meanwhile, if you go to the Republicans, and one of the things that is always hilarious to me about this analogy is that the Democrats who try to work with the Republicans don't understand. The Republicans want to kill you. Okay, the Republicans, they want your seat. They want you dead. They will do anything in their power to do so. You're not doing anything outside of undermining your own political party by sitting there and saying, we need to make sure the Republicans are okay with our agenda first. I mean, but yet here we are. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, on the right side of the field, doesn't matter if there's Republicans that are really close to the Democrats, even though that fence is between them, they'll always side with the most extreme guy on the furthest reaches of that right field. They'll go all the way over to them because they do not break away from the party. And if you wonder why Republicans kick the Democrats' butt so much, it's that simple thing. It's that simple thing. Well, that inconsistency. I'll get to that in a second. But that's one is that Republicans realize that fence is there for a reason. We're on one side, they're on the other. Democrats are like, well, I'll sell out all those people as long as they'll acknowledge my existence on the other side of the fence. There is that consistency problem, if I may bring that up again. And I think that this is something that we have to understand about Democrats. And, Senator Sinema down in Arizona is the latest to show this off, is that you get these guys that will campaign. And it's like, I'm going to keep prescription drug costs down. Look at me, elect me, and I will fight to keep prescription drug costs down. Well, all it takes is one lobbyist from the pharmaceutical industry to walk into many of these senators' offices, and this is not just a moderate senator thing. This is across the gamut on the Democratic side. And they'll come on in, and they'll say, "Here's $1 million, and all you have to do is basically sacrifice your own initiative." And they'll say, "Okay, $1 million. That's great. I will fight my own party." And they do. They do it with consistency. They do it with glee. Republicans are not that way. You could have someone come in and say, you know, here's all I want to do is I want to reenact the assault weapons ban. That's the only thing I want to do. It's legal. We need to get assault weapons off the street. It's the only issue with the weapons that we want to deal with. That's what it is. I'll give you $20 million. They'll say that right to a Republican. I will give you $20 million. All you have to do is champion the assault weapons ban. Hey, I'll take your $20 million, but you're crazy if you think for 1 second I'm going to basically come on out there and change my party platform. There's no way. I'm not going to go champion assault weapons ban. You can give me the $20 million, but I'm not going to do what you say. And as much as that's difficult for Democrats to like, that standard, the ability that the Republicans still understand there is the reason why they're a Republican and not a Democrat or a moderate Democrat is because they like the Republican Party. Democrats, there's a lot of moderate Democrats that I just don't think like being Democrats. And so they'll quickly abandon the party if they can, and they do. Meanwhile, when it comes to their own initiatives and stuff they've even campaigned on, A lot of Republicans will, or a lot of Democrats rather, will sell out their own party and their own initiatives and their own platform for a few bucks. And Republicans just don't do that. They just don't do that. And so this is kind of the reason why we're in the problem that we're in now. And what it takes is generally a fairly overwhelming election where the Democrats win a lot of seats, and all of a sudden Manchin and Sinema don't have the power that they have, and they realize, well, I better go along with this, or at least that they don't feel as guilty if they, you know, if they go along with the Democratic platform, and things get done. But I mean, let's the filibuster. For God's sakes, the filibuster should be dead. Is there any Democrat outside of a handful of senators that think the filibuster should still be around? No. And if Schumer was half the political strategist that McConnell is, and I can't stand Mitch McConnell, he's a horrible human being, but if Schumer was one-tenth the strategist of McConnell, he himself would have gotten rid of it and been done with it. Or they would have brought in the vice president, who can actually change things in the Senate, and basically had Vice President Harris do it. Absolutely. And it'd been done. And no one would have questioned it. It would be finished. But here we are. Still, at the end of the day, as I point out these faults, and I mean, we do need to understand the faults of where the Democrats are coming from, that these faults are what kills our initiatives, or kills our agendas. And I'm not going to get as upset with Biden, because Biden does have a larger role as president. I will say some of the things have really bugged me. I don't know why he hasn't stopped line three yet. I don't know why he hasn't been far more vicious on what happened to the Haitians at the border. I think that at the same time, though, I think sometimes the guy gets the raw deal. I mean, he's not the guy that pulled the troops out of Afghanistan. That was Trump. And they did it in a way that it was almost impossible for Biden to stop it. And so when the things went off the rails, and, you know, to sit and scream at Biden for it, well, no, you can scream at Trump for that. That being said, though, we have politicians who like to run on populist message, and when it comes down to it, they're weak, because they're always looking to compromise with the other side of the aisle before they'll compromise with their own party, and they're always willing to take a donation to sacrifice their own agenda. And that, at the end of the day, is a massive fault of the Democrats. But that being said, it still is a lot better to have them in charge than the other guys. We saw what happened when the Republicans were in charge. We see it every time. I mean, my God, look at that Supreme Court. That Supreme Court, because too many Democrats, you know, didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, and also let's also put up the fact that there was a massive brainwashing campaign on the right to basically poison that well back in 2016. We have now a Supreme Court that, unless we do expand it, will be ruling with outrageous rulings, violating all of our civil rights, making this a corporatocracy where corporations have the rights instead of the people. And we all have to pay massive taxes to offset Christmas bonuses for the Fortune 500 companies. Those rulings are coming. I mean, your civil rights, I mean, they're to keep their power, they'll go with the populist, that far-right populist agenda, and they'll get rid of all gay rights. They'll get rid of all women's rights. They'll get rid of all voting rights. They'll do it in a heartbeat. And the Democrats just sit there and say, gee willikers, they kick sand in our face again. But still, this is what we've got. And you may not like it. I mean, and I've said this. I mean, if you don't like the situation, I can buy that. I can understand that. But you need to start working on a third party if you want to do that. And not just we'll try it for a few weeks and, it's going to be hard work. Oh, like that. No, you've got to really go out there and push. I mean, Ron Paul was able to take over the entire Republican Party through a series of primaries where he saw the weakness within the Republican Party. The primaries were you could take over the primaries with the most far right loon balls, and that drove that country, that their party, right to the far right extreme. And now look at them. They got Nazis showing up. They got libertarians showing up, and they don't seem like they're too far away from the Republican platform anymore. Democrats, you can change things. If you don't like the current system, you can change it. It just requires a crap load of work. And you see, that's what happens, is you get lazy and you just don't want to do it. It's going to be too hard. Well, that's what it's going to take. And the reality is that, that you know, you, until that time comes, the Democrats, you know, you may not like this, are still your better option. Because at the end of the day, they're still trying to help out more people, including with stupid Manchin and Sinema and their stupid standards. So well, let me you know make sure I repeat something else I have said, and I've said for years. Stop thinking social media posts are doing any goddamn thing at all, okay? Your creative memes don't do anything. If you want to keep defeating Republicans, there is one very simple thing. It's actually a two-pronged attack that will defeat Republicans every single time. If everyone who is listening to this show right now gets 25 people registered to vote for the 2022 election, and then B, make sure those 25 people get to the polls, you will absolutely destroy the Republicans on Election Day. It's that simple. And no, your creative meme, that zinger you got out there on Twitter, that's not doing any damn thing. Get 25 people. You got a year and a month. Get 25 people registered to vote for the 2022 election. And then on Election Day in 2022, or beforehand, if we've got early voting, make sure those people do vote. Because if you do that, then you'll make change. And the bigger the Democrats' majority is, then the less we have to worry about jackasses like Manchin and Sinema. And until that time, don't sit and gamble about whether the Republicans can take over again. Because I'll tell you what, if they do, God help us all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah. La, la, la. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Let's get Dynamo Dave in here really quick before we get to the end of the show. Welcome on in, Dynamo.
Yeah, so Matt, I agree with you 99.99999% of the time, but I just want to make one point. If you remember the 2016 election, presidential election, there was Hillary and Bernie Sanders were the major ones toward the very end. And Bernie, if you remember, there's some shenanigans that happened in that election, or that, what do you call that?
Dave, I'm cutting you off right now, and I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to do the same thing in there. And the fact that you went with Hillary, come on, man, you're better than that. At this point, please grow up. I'm going to tell you the same thing I did. I went and did the numbers. Bernie Sanders did not take the southeastern United States seriously. That's what cost him. Not super delegates, nothing else. His deficit after the southeastern states alone was monumental. And it was not something he was going to overcome. Bernie Sanders would have won if he would have taken the southeastern United States seriously. And he didn't. And I'm sorry, that's a hard truth, but I've run the numbers. And you can go run the numbers yourself. The numbers don't lie. He did so poorly in those states that basically handed every delegate to Hillary Clinton. And if you start getting to a point where it's a 50-50 over 60-40 split in every other state, and 95% of all the delegates in the Southeast went to Hillary Clinton, well, that's why he lost. So just stop and grow up, okay? And your righteous smugness doesn't do a damn thing, because that guy, if you were one of those people that sat there and I'm not gonna vote, well, it's because of you we got Trump, and it's because of you we got the Supreme Court. So stop it, please. 952-946-6205. Final story. A 60-year-old grain farmer in northwestern Minnesota has been charged with receiving more than $540,000 by filing false insurance claims to reported weather-related crop damage in recent years. Nelson sought awarded payouts in connection with his claim to corn and soybean crops in Becker and Clay counties that were lost to excessive moisture. In 2018-2019, Nelson falsely reported losses in those years to obtain crop insurance payments, which was not entitled to, resulting in the recipient of $548,000 of fraudulent payments. The payments were processed to a private insurance company sponsored by the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, an agency with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, wait a second here. If we ever find a person who is receiving welfare got a dime more than they were entitled to. Every Republican starts screaming about how we have to completely and totally get rid of the welfare system because it's being abused by one person over there. Here you have this federally government-backed insurance program where someone stole $550,000 worth of money. How many individual people's taxes is that this guy pocketed? And yet no one will sit there and say the same thing, that, hey, if someone is out here stealing $550,000 worth of money in federal tax dollars, well then, yeah, isn't this kind of a case where maybe we should go back to that program and kill that program? Of course, every Republican will sit there and say, no, that's a good program. We need to save it for the farmers. But once again, if a family that's on welfare gets a dime more than they're entitled to, we've got to scrap the entire welfare system. And you think I'm joking? Reminder that Tori Westrum tried to get to where you could not use food stamps at a farmer's market because he felt that that was getting them too good of food. Yeah. Hypocrisy. It knows a lot of different names on the right, doesn't it? Native Roots Radio up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.